It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and you may not recognize the name John Chapman from your history books. The pioneering American nurseryman is better known as Johnny Appleseed, who introduced apple trees to large parts of Pennsylvania, Ohio, and the Midwest. We're marking the 240th anniversary of Johnny Appleseed's birth, which is actually tomorrow, September the 26th, and Johnny Appleseed's connection to Pittsburgh with our culture contributor, Joe Wose. Joe, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
How much of what folklore and pop culture portray of Johnny Appleseed is true?
You know, a surprising amount of it. You know, we picture Johnny Appleseed as walking around barefoot with a, old sack on his back instead of a shirt and a tin pot on his head. And that's surprisingly pretty accurate. You know, there's some question about the tin pot, but he was a very, very practical person who believed in recycling long before, you know, we considered it. So he didn't believe in wearing a shirt if an old sack would do just as well and cut some holes in it. He didn't wear shoes, which was pretty common actually back there for a lot of the farming community. And often people would give him shoes. He would just give them away to the next person. He was a very generous person. So a lot of what we know about him is true. Some of the more eccentric stories, also probably true. He was a very, very eccentric character and, was really beloved in his lifetime.
Well, talk about some of the eccentricities. What would be an example of some crazy aspect of Johnny Appleseed's character?
Well, I mean, some of the things that, you know, were regarded as crazy then, we can look upon and say, boy, this guy really cared about animal rights before there was such a thing. For example, if he saw someone mistreating a horse, there are several documented cases where he would buy the horse and then go and buy up some pasture land, set it into that pasture land, and give the horse to someone else with a promise that they would take good care of it. So, you know, back then it was just crazy. Why would you go buy a horse, you know, and just give it away? But he was very, very much believed that these animals had certain rights, which is a crazy idea back then. And he took it quite seriously.
He must have been, if he had the resources to do that kind of thing, to engage in that kind of philanthropy, he must have been doing things that were – he must have been profiting by his ideas.
He was. One of the things that is a misconception about Johnny Appleseed is that he was this, you know, poor man wandering, you know, aimlessly through the wilderness. He was actually quite well off. He didn't just give away all his apple seeds and apple trees. What he would do is he actually stayed ahead of the settlers. He was a good bit ahead of them, and he would find land that looked good. He would plant these small apple orchards and small areas where he would grow these apple trees, and then he would sell it as the settlers came through. He would then sell that to them. You know, one of the things you had to do in order to make a land claim in the unclaimed West was to actually make improvements to the land. So he would make the improvements for them by growing apple trees, and then they could lay a claim to that land. So he was using that as a way, and a lot of that money he would give away. He would do things like I mentioned, with buying a horse, and he was a very, very generous man. But when he had passed away, he owned over 1,500 acres of land.
And was Pittsburgh considered the untamed West back in those days?
You know, Pittsburgh was the gateway to the West. It was the last bit of civilization, the last sort of major city before you hit that untamed West. So Pittsburgh played a very important part, not just in that expansion as we headed west, but it also played a very, very important part in sort of the creation of Johnny Appleseed.
And the nickname, it's natural that someone might have given him that nickname based on what he did with his life. But how did that legend grow to the point where we're still talking about him 240 years later?
I think because he was such this rich character, you know, people do latch on to people with those idiosyncrasies that make them quirky. But he was a very real and very authentic person. He also was very much a missionary. He was going door to door, not just planting apple trees and such, but he was also spreading, you know, his religion, his faith. And so he had a direct connection to those settlers and to the Native Americans as well. He was out there speaking with them, talking with them. So stories grew up out of these personal experiences, and those stories were shared and spread, and then they were printed, and so his legend just continued to grow just because he was so well-liked.
And years later, you know, there's all these incarnations of Johnny Appleseed showing up on television, for example. I remember as a kid, a character, it was, you know, a real life, not an animated depiction, but a real life Johnny Appleseed guy coming on television. I can't remember the show or the context per se, but he's playing a guitar. So was Johnny Appleseed, was he a musician? Was he a Pied Piper of sorts?
He was not really musical. He wasn't really known for that.
So
anyway,
they just came up with that for the television.
So they would come up with these proposals. So these things would be added as different layers. You know, a lot of you know, Disney gave him this sort of, you know, real strong Christian sort of overtones to it. And he was a very religious man, but he had very different beliefs than sort of a lot of the more traditional Christianity did.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm talking with Joe Woese, our culture contributor, about John Chapman, who was better known as Johnny Appleseed, the man who introduced apple trees to large parts of Pennsylvania, Ohio, and the Midwest. So the Pittsburgh connection was the fact that he planted a lot of apple trees here, or is there more to it than
that? It actually goes deeper than that. There's actually a he had when he was in his 20s, began traveling heading west, and he had lived very briefly in Warren, PA, before getting to Pittsburgh. Now, there's a lot of different conflicting stories, but there is an awful lot out there of stories of him actually living in Pittsburgh for up to 12 years. You know, that is verified by things like in his obituary in Indiana when it ran, they listed his home as Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He came here to sort of work on, you know, in the boatyards and just sort of find odd work. And there was a general at one of the forts who had met him and saw that he was a hard worker and asked him if he would maintain his personal apple orchards. And that sort of, according to the legend, is where he fell in love with this idea of, you know, going forth and sharing this as a business model and really just absolutely just fell in love with the idea.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, he actually, according to a lot of the documentation, he would have lived on Grant's Hill, which is now Grant Street. They had actually leveled off and gotten rid of the hill in Pittsburgh.
Well, imagine that, one less hill in Pittsburgh.
One less hill in Pittsburgh. But that is where he's alleged to have made his home. This would have been interesting because according to, you know, these stories, he would have been in Pittsburgh during the Whiskey Rebellion. And what's interesting about that is that Johnny Appleseed didn't plant apples so we could make apple pie and sit there and eat a cool, crisp apple.
We're talking hard cider here?
That was the only use for these apples.
No
kidding.
Because
they were very, very sour. He planted them specifically to be used to make hard apple cider. So he would have had some skin in this game, so to speak, during the Whiskey Rebellion.
And so that kind of answers my question of why apples. Because, I mean, since that wasn't a dominant thing to plant in those days, you could plant other things.
He could have planted anything. He could have planted pears or cherries, just about anything.
Is that why apples have become so popular?
I think, you know, apples had been popular for a long time, but he was using a different process. He was actually planting directly from apple seeds that he was obtaining from a lot of the, you know, apple mash that was being made in Pittsburgh. He would collect up all the seeds and then use those to start his saplings. Even in that era, most of the apples that were being produced, the apple trees were produced through grafting. So they were taking a good tree that produced a nice sweet apple and then grafting it to another tree, and that's how they were producing them. So this was very intentional. He knew as you headed west, they would want alcohol, and he had that foresight.
Something else that he perceived about Pittsburgh, apparently. So at the end of the day, what is Johnny Appleseed's legacy, and how do his principles and his ideas apply today?
Well, I think he was one of the first environmentalists. He believed in leaving, you know, nothing, no trace behind. He believed in recycling. He believed in this concept that if you had a campfire, you left it better than you found it. So he really did believe in improving the land and giving back. We were just travelers on a journey on our way to somewhere else. And this is not our land. There are future generations. And that's what he was always thinking about. He was always thinking about, as he moved along, how he could leave it better for those who would come after him. And I think that's his real legacy. As we look to our own environment and how we should be treating things, he recognized, leave it better for those who come behind us.
Joe Woese is our culture contributor, and we've been talking about John Chapman, better known as Johnny Appleseed. Was he okay with that nickname, by the way?
He loved the nickname, absolutely.
It is tomorrow is the 240th anniversary of Johnny Appleseed's birth, and he has quite the connection to Pittsburgh. Again, culture contributor Joe Woese, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, as always.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.fm or as a podcast in iTunes. Send us your story ideas at ESSPGH at WESA.fm. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.